Welcome to Bonding Time, the BDA's podcast series on the U.S. bond markets, and typically through a D.C. lens. This podcast series will cover a range of issues, including the latest bond market technologies, politics and federal regulation, the challenges of COVID, and the new remote workforce, diversity and inclusion on the trading desk, and interviews with bond market leadership from across the country. As the only D.C.-based trade group exclusively focused on the U.S. bond markets, the BDA is really excited to bring you this new product, which we hope adds some tangible value to you and your business.
As part of the BDA's Bonding Time podcast series, I'm pleased to introduce a new monthly segment with Tom Kozlik, Head of Municipal Credit and Strategies at Hilltop Securities. We plan a monthly look at municipal credit conditions, muni credit outlook, as well as a federal policy outlook. So Tom, welcome to the Bonding Time podcast. It's pretty famous in the municipal bonds world, so we're glad we can bring you on here, maybe help bolster our image. So we appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Brett. I really appreciate it. There was a lot going on in 2020, and it seems like there's even more going on right now. So there's plenty to talk about.
Yeah, it's a bonus month of 2020. So I'm hoping here, maybe February, we can finally turn the corner. But with that being said, we're inauguration week. President Biden will be ascending the presidency. His administration will be taking over. And I think the biggest note for that was last week, the introduction of a massive stimulus package that he plans to introduce and make, I guess, the cornerstone, we want to say, of the beginning of his administration. So I know there were several big public finance points in that, especially the $350 billion of direct state and local funding with, I think, minimal checks on what it can be used for. What's your take on that? Is that enough to stabilize credit issues? Does that affect your issuance? Two-part question. Is that enough to stabilize credit issues? Does that change your credit outlook for 2021?
Yeah, so I think that it's important to look at this proposal while considering the current backdrop. And what I mean by current backdrop is that COVID-19, even though we're now, 10 months, if not a little more, into this ordeal, COVID-19 is still spreading uncontrollably. It really spread, and the number of deaths hit a record in December. There's supposed to be another record of deaths in January, and that number is likely to remain high in February. So I think it's important to remember that. I think that budget shortfalls at the state and local government level, while some might not be as high as projected towards the end of the summer, even in the fall, there still are projected budget shortfalls at the state and local government level. And so I think that it's important to remember that. I think that this, not only the $350 billion that was included for direct, in the form of direct and unencumbered state and local government aid, but that $170 billion for K-12 schools and higher education institutions needs to be considered when we're talking as well. There was also another $20 billion for mass transit providers that was proposed in this first stage rescue package, but it's really the $170 billion for K-12 schools and higher education and $350 billion for state and local governments that is likely to really help, you know, at least alleviate, and in some cases, and or scenarios really eliminate the budget shortfalls that are being projected countrywide. And so I think that if it's passed, it would be a boost to state and local government credit for sure. And it, along with potential future, the next phase, because I know that many are expecting that this next phase would be something infrastructure focused. If this passes and there is more infrastructure focused legislation that comes down the path, then we would substantially increase our issuance forecast for 2021.
That makes a lot of sense. And I've been dumbfounded at some of the issuance forecasts since I guess the Georgia elections were called last week. I know that 2020 was a banner year for issuance, but it looks like 2021 might put that to shame. Is that your take? are some of the forecasts I've seen overdone, or is 500 really an achievable number?
So our issuance forecast for 2021, the issuance forecast that we published back in the middle of November was for $375 billion. And we're going to increase that based on the fifth phase of relief that came out at the end of 2020, for sure. But now we're trying to figure out if we're going to be able to increase our issuance forecast again based on a sixth phase of relief that could include a combination of the potential state and local government budget shortfall aid and or extra stimulus. Now, there are some timing concerns for sure. I think that by the beginning to middle of February, we'll have a better idea of what the timing will look like and whether or not issuance is going to be how severe or how, maybe I shouldn't say severe, but how significant the impact to issuance could be for 2021. Because it's one thing if there's a certain amount of aid that's approved, in like maybe the first or second quarter of this year, but if those stimulative infrastructure measures aren't followed through until, the third or fourth quarter, then that's going to have a limited amount of impact on our issuance forecast for this year.
That makes sense. And I want to dig into the nuances more of the $350 billion, if you think that's a big enough number, or what if it gets cut back a little bit. But to paint the picture, you and I were talking before we jumped on, it's a 50-50 split in the Senate. It's a really narrow majority for the Democrats in the House. For this full package to be passed, I think, as is, with the 60-vote threshold that currently lies in the Senate, it would take a minor miracle. So that puts the Biden administration and the Democrats, the Biden administration yesterday said that they want a bipartisan deal. So I say they give that, what, 3 or 4 weeks before they move on to just trying to pass something, which would bring us into the budget reconciliation conversation, which is a very confusing procedure here in D.C. where they can pass one budget reconciliation a year, which would be this bill, and it can pass by simple 50 vote margin. So I think that, to answer my own question here, sorry to do that, but I think that's clearly a backup if they really want to get this passed. But let's say we stick with the bipartisan aspect and they try to get this through. What if the $350 billion gets cut back to $150 unencumbered to state and local governments? Is that enough? What would be your bottom line number to get state and local governments through next year unfazed, if that makes any sense?
Yeah, I think that there's a general outlook about what state and local government shortfalls are going to look like coming into this budget season, and even into the budget for next year as well, because I think that one of the things that we're learning is that this is nowhere near over, that we very well might be, hopefully we're not in the same position in January of 2022 as we are now. Hopefully we are on the road to some type of normalcy, but we are likely a more significant amount of time away from normalcy than I think what many believed in the beginning and middle of 2020. So there are some state and local governments that need budget relief more than others, for sure. And the budget forecasts that were published in some cases at the end of the summer or even in the fall, in some cases are not as, those shortfalls are not as severe. But there are situations in certain states and certain cities where the budget shortfalls are a little more severe. And budget relief, direct unencumbered budget relief, is needed to get them to a closer, a more credit neutral position. Now, a combination of the $350 billion and $170 billion for education is definitely going to be closer. And I think that, but like as you were just pointing out, the fact of the matter is that aid for state and local governments, while it's been supported going back to March of 2020 by the Democrats, it has been a significant roadblock because there aren't folks on each side of the aisle that agree on the importance of this line item.
Yeah, that honestly, from our perspective, has been one of the more confusing items of 2020. State and local government funding has really become a political football that I personally didn't see. I mean, I guess looking back, you could you could see that building. But to consider that conversation is still ongoing while you have folks being laid off en masse at the state and local level continuously, it still is mind-boggling. It seems to be an easy fix, just from my perspective.
Yeah, we did see in December there was economic data that came in lighter, and in some cases much lighter than expected. We saw the jobs data in December that came in negative as opposed to slightly positive as was expected. And that those are the general economic numbers. Where state and local government jobs are concerned, in three of the last four months, we've seen state and local governments eliminate positions. And I think that that's a good indication of what it is that state and local governments are dealing with on the budget side. And I think that that's going to continue unless they get some kind of near-term relief.
That makes a lot of sense. And I know something I always bring up with you in our discussions. I'm always concerned about the public transit sector. Do you think that's still the biggest risk in the public sphere for credit issues, or what's your take on that?
I think that there are situations where it's not only just the mass transit entities, but the entities that are in some of the places that are being hardest hit. I think that there is and you can see this when you look at the mobility data, not just by state, but one of the things that I do is I look at the Dallas Fed's Mobility and Engagement Index. And you can look at that. Not there's national data, there's state data, and then there's MSA data. And you can see in the MSA data nationally, the mobility numbers have been falling since the end of November, and they are now nationally at the levels that they were close, back in May. But there are some areas that are being hit harder than others, and that is really the gist of what it is that policymakers are going to have to figure out is how it is that they can help the areas that have been hardest hit as a result of COVID-19.
Yeah, I agree there. And let's touch on one more point. HR 2 last year, the Moving Forward Act that passed the House, right. The Muni Bond Christmas Tree Bill that would include the restoration of advance refundings, raise the annual issuance limit on BQ bonds to $30 million, index that to inflation, expand the use of private activity bonds, a plethora of private activity bond changes. How much of a positive impact would that have on your outlook? I mean, we're concerned about stimulus passing as is. There will be some work to get a package such as that, which has been flirted with maybe March, April, May of this year to get through, but it seems like both chambers seem to be really willing to give it a shot. Would that change your outlook? How positive of an impact would that have on the market and the economy as a whole, I guess, is a good way to put it.
Yeah, I've been saying, and I still believe, that any of those really pro-municipal sector elements could, as you're kind of laying out, they very well could end up finding their way into, it looks like now, what would be the president's follow-up proposal.
Right.
I think that the potential for advance refundings with tax exempts, if that comes back, that has the potential not only in 2021, but in 2022 or going forward to increase the amount of tax exempts that are sold and decrease the amount of taxable issuance. We saw a pretty big increase in taxable issuance in 2020. If issuers are able to use tax exempts for advance refundings, that's going to decrease the taxable issuance, number one. Number two, if there is a BAB-like tax, subsidized BAB or Build America Bond stimulus program, that could increase taxable issuance. And what I would use for a guide is I'd look at the amount of new issuance that we seem to see in 2009 and 2010 compared to previous years, which was a pretty big jump, and so that's why it is that I'm saying that, on the one hand, my issuance forecast for 2021 was $375 billion. If we kind of get all of these things But all of these things quickly, like if this doesn't materialize until the third or fourth quarter, then issuance for 2021 isn't going to be as substantially increased, but 22 it could be. But let's say we pretty quickly, you know, by the beginning or the middle of the second quarter this year, if we get a lot of these municipal elements included and or passed, then it wouldn't be surprising for me to see issuance somewhere between 500 and 600 billion. But there's a lot of ifs, and there's a lot of stuff that has to kind of fall into place for that to happen.
Yeah, and I think historically, if you have unified government, you get one big package through, and then it kind of hits a really log jam. So only time will tell. It's a new year, Tom. As we said, it's 2021. So let's hope for the best and see what we can get past here in the next 6 months. So with that, let's leave it there. We'll pick back up towards the end of February. Hopefully, it's more good news. Hopefully, we can get the stimulus through and move on to some muni provisions. So. We look forward to continued discussion, and thanks for joining us, Tom.
Thanks for having me. I look forward to talking again.